Ever notice that everything you ever thought would make you happy ever after didn't? Ooh, me too. It turns out Sean Cassidy was not my soulmate. Orgasms only last a few seconds and money does not buy happiness. Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Fraser and welcome to Sex, Love, and Elephants, the weekly podcast where we explore relationships, mind, and the meaning of life. A place where you are normal if you feel like something's missing, even though you have it all. Because guess what? Happiness is an inside job. How do I know? Well, if a Buddhist nun and a sex expert had a baby, I'm it. I'm a psychologist, sex therapist, and author. I've meditated for 12 hours a day for months at a time. I've studied Tantra in Tibet, and I've taught for people like Tony Robbins and Jack Canfield, and helped thousands of couples reignite passion. My mission with a loving heart is to kick your ass off the couch and into awakening. And here's the secret. If you want to cultivate wild love that lasts, compassion and curiosity, and the superpower of being happy for no reason, first, you've got to meet your elephant. So let's go. Well, hello, hello, hello. And you know, all good things must come to an end. And today is the last episode, don't worry, not of Sex, Love, and Elephants, but it's the last episode of our Summer of Love. You'll be hearing this on September 19th, which means there's only two more days, at least in our hemisphere, North American hemisphere, two more days of summer. On the 21st of September, we fall back in love with fall. So this is the last in our, gosh, where are we at now? 9-10-part series on the Summer of Love 2022, where I've been answering your sex and love questions all summer long. Now, I'm going to talk about a tough one tonight, a painful one, a sad one, one that too many of us will recognize. And that's when we're in something called negative sentiment override, when we are in a deteriorating phase of our relationship where it seems like both people can only see what is wrong with their relationship. They can no longer see what is right. Tons of blaming the other person, no one taking responsibility for their part in the problem. I've had a few of you write to me about this in a lot of pain, in a lot of crisis. I dearly hope you'll join my free workshops at the end of October to get some more help and support. You can ask me your questions live on those video calls. You're not on video, just I am. But let me get you some information right now because those live workshops will be at the end of October. So that's still 5-6 weeks away. And I don't want you to have to wait that long to get a glimmer of hope. So this question came to me phrased a number of different ways. But basically, Dr. Cheryl, we fight all the time. They blame me. I blame them. Is there any hope for our relationship? Or to be frank, a lot of you have sent me a pretty one-sided question, which is my partner does this. My partner does that. They don't apologize. They yell at me. They don't take responsibility. But nowhere in your question am I hearing any admission that maybe you are at least a small or large part of the problem. So I'm going to phrase the question today this way. Can two people who are blaming each other for their misery ever fix a relationship? Now, the bad news is, and I'm going to, you know, shock a few people, maybe, my answer is no. Two people who are refusing to take any responsibility for the relationship problems, that are stuck in the blame game, that are saying it's all their partner's fault, in whatever creative ways we do that, you have very little hope of recovering if you're in a fairly chronic session of negative sentiment override. Now, that can look like one or two different things. One is you've been deteriorating slowly or quickly, more and more fighting, less and less real communication, more and more blame, more and more misery, anxiety, threats to leave the relationship, threats that it's over, begging to stay, silent treatment, sleeping downstairs, sleeping on the couch. You may have been in trouble for quite a while, be that weeks or months or even a year or two. That's one presentation. of a couple in negative sentiment override, and I'm going to define that a little bit more in a few minutes as well. Another presentation is the roller coaster presentation, I'm going to call it, where you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. Sometimes you're doing well. There's laughter, there's kindness, you go on a date, you appreciate each other, you remember the sweet things, you make love, you're doing well, you have a good week, you have a pleasant week, things are pretty good. And then there's another style of dysfunctional negative sentiment override. Wow, were you ever in trouble? And you're not going to make it unless you make some changes. And that's where you're up and you're down and you're up and you're down. So sometimes you're doing well. You have a good date. You remember you love each other. You appreciate each other. Other times you're crashing down and you're in a repeating pattern of arguing. An ugly, repetitious, oh my goodness, we've been here before. It hurts so bloody much. Where I'm in my issues and you're in your issues and we spiral. And we have that same horrible, punishing, painful, repeating argument that we've had dozens of times before. And then there's the silent treatment. There's the ignoring. There's the lack of ability to make up. And it's finger pointing that it's the other person's problem. So whether you've been in trouble kind of chronically for a while, or whether you have periods of smooth sailing or even really good relationship weeks or days or a few weeks, and then you crash back down to the bottom of the roller coaster, to the pain and the shame and the blame and the chaos, you're in deep trouble unless you take 100% responsibility for your relationship. Yeah. That's going to make some people kind of hot under the collar, and that's okay. I'm willing to give you tough love. You are 100% responsible for the relationship issues you're having. Dr. Cheryl, how the hell can that be true? My partner screamed and yelled at me. My partner called me names. My partner walked out, slammed the door, stayed at their friends, but didn't tell me and came home the next day. Is that excusable behavior? Oh, hell no. That's abusive behavior, that's abandoning behavior, and that is unacceptable behavior. But here's the thing. If you are busy blaming your partner for their BS, and it is in the example I just gave, very real BS, very painful BS, absolutely those are unacceptable behaviors. You're putting the power for your relationship success or failure in the hands of someone else, your partner. What would happen? And yes, this is partly a thought experiment. It's a way of approaching your troubled relationship through a new lens. I have a good chunk of couples in my immersion program each year. You've heard this summer that I'm offering the program only once this year in 2022. We're kicking off right around November 1st this year for 12 weeks together. I'll be giving my free workshops at the end of October. Whether or not the long program is of interest to you, please come join the free workshops and ask me your questions live, as I said a little earlier today already. But here's the thing. Every year, out of, say, 100 couples, there's about 15 to 20% of them who are really in dire straits. They are on the end of their relationship. They join my program as a last ditch effort to see if they can find ways to communicate that are more healthy. They can find ways to forgive the injuries they've given each other emotionally in the past. Can they find ways to recreate some romance and fun again? Can they find ways to see the beautiful person standing right in front of them, even with the history of hurts and letdowns and even betrayals? Can they renovate their relationship? Can they repair? And the answer is, in some cases, oh, hell yes. I have had the absolute privilege in my former private practice where I worked with couples privately and in my online program in particular to work with couples, brave, amazing couples that have turned their sinking ship into a love boat, that have done incredibly brave, vulnerable work to confront some of their relationship demons, but not by exclusively blaming their partner. Today's theme is you must become 100% responsible for your relationship. You need to take 100% responsibility for fixing what's wrong, and you need to take 100% responsibility for your role in the relationship problems. Now, The math's going to get a little funky here, okay? Because maybe objectively, if I could deeply evaluate you and your partner, which I do at the beginning of the online program, you fill out an extensive questionnaire, I review each one, I get to know you, your history, your story from your first date to when you fell in love, to what your wedding was like, to what your highs and lows have been, and to what you're struggling with now and more. If I could evaluate your relationship objectively, bringing as much clinical skill to that as I possibly can, my history as a couples therapist, as a psychologist, as a sex therapist, as a communications expert, just don't ask my hubby, and as a Buddhist teacher and more, I might come to a well-informed, pretty accurate opinion that you're actually only around 20% responsible for the arguments, the disconnects, the dysfunctions in your relationship, but you're still 100% responsible for all of them. What, Cheryl? Come on. Now, I have a science degree. I got an A+ in calculus. I'm excellent at math. And I know that math doesn't sound like it makes sense. But whether I am only 20% responsible, I'm a more mild-mannered person. Maybe I have a less hair trigger emotional flooding response. I tend to be more calm. Maybe I have better communication skills because of the way I was raised or my profession or my personal or professional training, or because I've taken it as a study, and I don't yell and scream, and I don't threaten to break up with you, and I'm pretty fair. I have my issues, though, and I can be passive-aggressive, or I can be a little avoidant, or I can shut down and not tell you how I'm feeling when I'm upset. But let's say the best team of couples therapists in the world evaluated you and your sweetheart and said, you know, Jane, you're about 20% responsible for the ongoing really detrimental issues the two of you have, and John or other Jane, gay, straight, LGBTQ, whoever you are, whoever you love, however you love, welcome, welcome. I love love. My PhD research was on combating homophobia. All welcome here, but I'm going to use a heterosexual example of a Jane and a John right now. Jane, you're 20% responsible. John, you're 80% responsible, but you're both 100% responsible for fixing it. I know. Forget the math, get the message. As long as you're stuck in blaming your partner, you have very little hope of doing the compassion-based work, the courageous work, the loving work of finding your way through the minefield, the damaging, painful, destructive minefield of your negative sentiment override, your relationship in crisis, your rock bottom, your breakup point, your "we can't recover from this because there'll be too much water under the bridge" relationship phase. You're not going to recover if you're stuck in blaming your partner. Let me give you an example. There's a couple I'm currently working with in my advanced program who are stuck in that cycle. They are beautiful people. They're a roller coaster style. I've seen them when they've been loving and delightful. He did such a profoundly romantic proposal. He scattered rose petals all over the backyard in a snowstorm at Christmas time and created a heart and romanced the hell out of her. She had never met someone that kind, that thoughtful, that loving. She didn't think it was possible. They both come from a really tough background in their families and in their first marriages. Lots of verbal abuse and more. They found sanctuary together. They found love. They found possibility. They found a second chance to be happy together. I've seen them do, both of them, John and Jane, beautiful things for each other, beautiful skills with each other. But then their roller coaster goes down and they get stuck in their wounded patterns from childhood. They get stuck in their wounded patterns from their first marriages. They were both with very abusive partners in their first long-term marriages, which breaks my heart. Especially what breaks my heart is watching this two spiral in their bottoming out of their roller coaster to full negative sentiment override. Now, that's a term that a lot of psychologists use. John Gottman uses it. And it's kind of like what it sounds. And this should sound familiar to most of you, hopefully not in your current relationship. If so, you're in the right place. And I hope you'll join me for a 3-month immersion so we can help you renovate and give you the skills to slowly turn that sinking ship into a love boat again. But for others of us, this will resonate when we think about a previous relationship. Anything from our teenage years to the person before the person we're currently with. Negative sentiment override is this brutally painful emotional state a couple can end up in when, as the phrase implies, it feels like all you see, all your partner sees, are the negatives. So for example, you might be having a troubled phase and you're driving home and you're thinking, you know, I really want to treat John or Jane well tonight. I don't want us to bicker or argue. I'm going to bring home food. So you stop and you get Thai food on the way home and you go in with every intention. You've given yourself a pep talk on the drive home. Don't react if he or she is grumpy. Don't react if he or she says something critical. Keep your heart open. And you walk in the door, you go, hey, babe, I brought home Thai food. And they say, last time we had Thai food, it gave me an upset stomach. And bam, you're spiraling. Now, if you're in a decent state, you're like, babe, I forgot about your upset stomach. Well, you can have some rice and some of the milder stuff. And I can whip you up an omelet as well if you want, hon. Sorry about that. I forgot that you had an upset stomach. That's what a couple who's not in negative sentiment override might say. When we're in negative sentiment override, and hell yes, I've been there. I'll tell you a little story about a previous relationship in a minute. And what the wake-up call I had was that I had to end the relationship. But negative sentiment override is like walking not just on eggshells, but broken glass, a bed of nails that are heated up to nuclear power, 4,000 degrees, and you're in your very delicate bare feet and you can't get out of the room. And everywhere you step, it hurts like hell. No matter how carefully you step, your partner reacts. No matter what you say, it feels as though it's twisted and used against you. And it's not because your partner's evil, unless you're in a deeply dysfunctional relationship. Disclaimer, if you're in a relationship with a person with certain mental illnesses or certain profiles, then you may indeed be in a very dysfunctional relationship. But I'm talking to lovely people like Jane and John, who are very dysfunctional in their patterns, but neither of whom are mentally ill. Neither of whom are deliberately torturing each other. They're in negative frickin' sentiment override. You could come home when you're in this phase in your relationship, and hopefully it only lasts for a day because you've got the skills I teach in the Become Passion program, or you've learned them elsewhere where you know how to call a timeout when you start to have a flooded argument with contempt and criticism, with ugliness, with threats to divorce. I'm out of here. You're a piece of crap. No one could live with you. You need to learn to time out that shit, if I could be so bold, and stop the carnage and remove yourself and take a 30-minute timeout. We work on this really hard in the Become Passion program and a lot of other skills. You need to learn to understand your partner's point of view. And when you're blaming them and pointing out all the things they did wrong, when you're running a story in your head about how no one could possibly stand to be with them, when you are in that terribly painful, agonizing, heartbreaking negative sentiment override, you can't see the sun for the clouds. You can't see the beauty for the rain. You cannot see what you fell in love with. You can't see that your partner is in as much pain as you, that they are hurting deeply too, that when they are acting in those ugly ways, they are hurting. And no, it's not excusable. But if you're willing to roll your damn sleeves up and work really hard, there is a chance, a very real chance, that you can work your way out of negative sentiment override. When you're in negative sentiment override, your partner could say, hey, what's for dinner, babe? And you'll say, why are you mad? I didn't say I'd make dinner. Your partner could say, hey, sweetie, I'm making dinner. Do you want chicken or salmon? I don't know. Does that mean I should have made dinner? No matter what we say, it goes wrong. The negative emotions are overriding what? Well, you can guess. Overriding the positive. Overriding reality. Because seek and ye shall find, my friends. When we look for what's wrong, damn, we're going to find it. When we look for what's right, we are going to find it as well. My wake-up call in a relationship I was in for, I'm going to say about 3 or 4 years. It was long distance for about 1.5 years. He lived a province away, an hour-long flight or a 12-hour drive away. And we'd get together about 5-6 days a month. half the time at his place, half the time at my place. We were really in love, thought that this was it. I was in my late 30s. He was probably 6-7 years older than me. And eventually he moved to my province. He's always wanted to live closer to the ocean. And we eventually moved into a house together. We had a lot of possibility. We are both beautiful people who had some really shared interests and some great connection and some passion together. We did not together develop the skills that I teach and I practice with my husband now. This person and I would get into negative sentiment override. My issues danced with his issues. His rotten past and having been cheated on by his first wife would come up in distrust and projection on me. My fears, my childhood stuff would come out and my fear and distrust toward him. And we didn't have violent arguments or anything like that, nothing physical. They weren't even horribly verbally abusive, but they were way too often and we couldn't find our way to happiness and we couldn't seem to give each other the love, the space, and the kindness that we each desired. And again, we were grown-ups. I was like 38, 39, and he was, like I said, 6 or 8 years older than me. We weren't kids. And I remember after yet another negative sentiment override, I remember driving home at that time. I would commute from Vancouver Island to Vancouver once a week, and I'd spend 2 days in Vancouver seeing all my psychology patients from my former private practice there. I'd lived in Vancouver a long time. I'd moved back to Vancouver Island, which is a 2-hour ferry ride away. And I maintained my business in Vancouver for 6, 8, 10, 12 months as my primary income while I was building up a practice and a business over here on the island. So I'd go for 2 days, stay with my best friend over in the city, see a bunch of patients, come home. And when we were in our month or more of negative sentiment override, when I would start to get about 15 minutes away from our shared home, beautiful rental house on the ocean, idyllic, perfectly romantic, I'd start to feel sick to my stomach with anxiety because I was afraid we'd argue. I was afraid it would happen again. And I'd say, no, I'm going to just, you know, if he's not in a great mood, I won't react. I'll say, hey, babe, no problem. If you need to be quiet tonight, I won't, you know, criticize. If he doesn't come and give me a hug, I won't get all upset about it. And within a couple of minutes of walking in, we'd be like those people in bare feet on the broken glass and nails and all the things. And we'd both be in pain, even if not much was said, just the lack of the connection, the lack of the kindness. And I remember after an argument, my wake-up call and where the relationship ended for me is we'd had an argument, a verbal argument, the same stuff. I need this, you need that, why can't we? But we were both, I believe, more blaming the other person than taking our full ownership. We were really trying, mind you. Blessings on him. We really did try. We just were doing it clumsily. I wasn't practicing what I preach. I wasn't able to in that particular dynamic because of my own issues being triggered by his and vice versa and all sorts of abandonment and other really deep stuff we can talk about maybe on the podcast and I go into more in the longer programs. Bottom line is, me shut myself into the downstairs bathroom. He went upstairs and went to sleep in our bedroom, and I was sobbing. We're talking ugly crying, as they say, the snot, the swollen eyes, the grief, the just sobbing, the despair. He's sleeping upstairs. His defense mechanism was to kind of go distant and feel eerily calm and be able to sleep. Mine, unfortunately, this is a pretty common split between two people. Mine is to be super anxious and not be able to sleep and to ruminate and et cetera. I got up off the floor where I was kind of sobbing in a heap. I'd gone downstairs and gone in the bathroom, kind of lay on the floor sobbing in a heap. Not my finest moment and certainly a very, very painful moment. And I got up and I caught a look of myself in the mirror. The snot, the swollen eyes, the streaky, blotchy face. And there was just like a little soft realization. A little aha moment that I can't do this anymore. And that was the beginning of our ending. That was the beginning of us fairly calmly and fairly reasonably separating. We lived together. We thought this was it for life. It was intended to be common law partners for life. And that's an example of negative sentiment override and two really lovely people not able to find our way out of it at that time. The couple I'm currently concerned about, sending my heart to, assisting as I can, each of them has a story about the other and all the anger the other has, all the accusations the other throws at me, all the ways they never apologize, all the ways they don't trust me, all the ways they lie. And when I listen to Jane, her side of the story sounds very valid, and it feels very much like John is someone who's not doing his part. When I listen to John, his side of the story sounds very valid, and it sounds very much like Jane is not doing her part. This is the couple that I've also seen in moments of such beauty, moments of such grace. They are beautiful people, and I am rooting for them heart and soul to continue doing the work they're doing in the program, to move through the blame to the shouldering of responsibility. I, Jane, am 100% responsible for fixing this relationship. I, John, am 100% responsible for fixing this relationship. Now, some simple math that'll actually make sense. What's 100% plus 100%? 200%. That's a lot. What if we had 200% of good intention working for us? What if we had 200% of the willingness to take responsibility and say, I'm sorry, working for both of us? What if we had forgiveness working for both of us? What if we understood that our past abusive relationships before this one, our abusive parents, our awful upbringings are on our back like an ugly troll of a backpack, but that we don't have to keep carrying it in this marriage here and now? What if we could be willing to do what it takes, one small or large step at a time, to renovate this relationship and move from it's over to thank goodness we didn't give up. So all of you listening that resonate right now with John and Jane, know that it is possible to renovate. It may not be the right path for you or your partner. I can't know that. I'm not working with you. Again, a disclaimer, if there's physical abuse, if there's ongoing chronic verbal abuse, that is not being addressed, that your partner refuses to work on, that your partner categorically and only blames their response on you, then you may not be able to move forward. But before you decide that's you, know that I have worked with couples that had unbelievable, extreme negative sentiment override. And the predictor I look for is if both partners are at least a little bit willing to work on it, if both partners are at least a little bit willing to look at themselves and their own role, there is hope. There is hope. And I want to thank the couples in my career so far, almost 30 years now of working with couples, who have taught me over and over again never to give up on any couple, even when they've given up on themselves, to hold the light of possibility for them until such time as they may be able to see the light themselves. Which brings us to today's love bite. I am 100% responsible for the good and the problems in my relationship with you, and I am willing to bring my best self over and over again. Thank you so much for joining me on the last of the Summer of Love, your top love and sex questions answered on Sex, Love, and Elephants. Next week, it'll be fall, and I've got a new plan for a series of podcasts for you, so stay tuned for those. And a reminder, if you want to make sure that you're on the wait list to hear about when I have my free two-hour couples workshops, I teach that workshop, the same workshop, three or four or five different times on different days, once or twice a year. You can pick the time that works for you. Show up live with me. At the end, I do an extensive Q&A. I'll answer your questions live. You can correspond with me and more. And if that interests you, make sure you get on the waitlist and you'll be the first to hear and you won't miss anything. And that waitlist is also going to have some few goodies and giveaways and prizes. Oh, by the way, we sent a few prizes out to a few of you who took the Adventure Date Challenge and sent me your adventure date. Those are in the mail. You should be getting them soon. I'll announce the names of the winners actually next podcast. I don't have them on me right now. And I will be here with you next Monday as we fall back in love this fall. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sex, Love, and Elephants. But most of all, thank you for being part of this herd. If you enjoyed listening, please share this with a friend. And if you haven't already, I would love, love, love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review the show on your podcast player, because it really helps all the other elephants find us. If you have any questions or comments or maybe an idea for the show or you'd like to be a guest, reach out to me directly at drcherylfraser.com, where you can also sign up for weekly Love Bites, science-based tips for creating love and passion that last a lifetime.